Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, we find ourselves at the end of this week. It is Friday. We are still in our nation's capital. We are still in Washington, D.C. We're still at the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, the AHCE campaign. We are still working on building support for the AHCE Act. And we are making progress. Ha ha, looky there. I'm looking in the chat room. I see an old friend in the chat room. It's Guy James. And there's Lottie wandering in. Okay, warning in advance. I don't know what it is, but there is some sort of creepy nastiness in the system that seems to be giving off some electrical nonsense. We had another storm blow through, and we lost power for a time, and we lost internet for even longer there at the mansion. And if things don't work out, Agnes, like I said, please get a callback number from Guy. Transmit it to me, and we will make this thing happen one way or another. No, Guy James is with us this evening. I was sitting around thinking just a couple of nights ago, I can never come to Washington, D.C. I can never come to Washington, D.C. without thinking of my buddy Guy James, because we had, I had my introduction to Washington, D.C. Via Guy James. At a couple of the events, well, several events now that from which we have broadcast. The last time I got to run around with Guy was the end of this past January. And of course, you know that Guy James is a legendary progressive broadcaster. He's been fighting the vicious and vitriolic right wing for just about as long as any progressive broadcaster out there has been. I look forward to our conversation, and like I said the other night, I just thought, you know, here we are in D.C. again. I need to get in touch with Guy. We need to talk about the events transpiring and things happening in D.C. because it has been far, far too long. And yes, Agnes, if you would bring Guy James, legendary progressive broadcaster, on now, I would appreciate it. Let's see if it works. Are you there, Guy?
Yes, indeed, I am.
Oh, I'm so thrilled because A, the magic is working, and B, it's working to connect you to me. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm okay, but I'm reminded this is reminiscent of, and I have to tell your audience this, it's nothing they don't know, but I've spent some really anxious moments with Bob. Right before broadcast, or you know, at the very beginning, I'm going out of my mind, wondering if things are going to be technically okay. We're in D.C. doing something, and Bob's going, it's okay, it'll be all right. But Bob, there's only 15 seconds to go. Yeah, it's all right, it's okay. So,
yeah, I will never forget that one morning you looked at me as things were. It seemed like we were bailing water out of a barbed wire canoe, Guy. And you looked at me and said, Bob, have I ever explained to you that I don't handle stress well? And I said, yeah. Well, no, but it's going to be all right. Yeah. Okay, Bob. And it was. We got through it.
And oh, yeah. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, I got it.
Go, guy.
Yes. It's so good to talk to you, Bob.
You sound in fine form, and I'm sorry it's been so long since we've had a conversation. We should have done this sooner, and we should do it more often. But frankly, we should have done it considerably earlier because, you know, you're in Florida, my friend, and you're kind of down there at the epicenter of the wonderful, well, no, not wonderful, but the world of right wing weird. Do you find yourself looking around asking, you know, what am I doing here?
It's incredible. Do you know that Collier County, Florida, Naples, has the highest per capita donation to the Republican Party of any place in the country?
No, I would have figured that would have been like Orange County, California.
Nope. Per capita. The highest dollar amount in the country in Naples, Florida. So I do wonder sometimes, President Obama was here in Fort Myers recently, and I do wonder why he came. Not gonna win anything here. They never have. You know, in Collier County, where Naples is, there hasn't been a Democrat win a elected office for, not since I've lived here.
That's amazing, but I guess he's got to come down and show the flag, right? And
that's
but
right.
The GOP will be having their weird little clavern meeting there, not too far north of you, fairly soon, right? Are they beginning to hop up and down, you know, screaming, screeching, that kind of thing yet?
Oh, you ought to read the local papers, the Naples Daily News and the Fort Myers News Press every day. You just ought to see them. It's I don't know. It seemed like something right out. It seemed like Joe McCarthy published both of them. It's fascinating. I've never seen anything like it. And of course, being a swing state, a big swing state, we're getting just inundated with political ads right now. I'm to the point where I can barely stand it.
Well, I saw a story earlier today, Guy, and I don't know if you've seen it yet, but are you familiar with former Republican Party Chairman Jim Greer?
Yes.
And his little deposition testimony, it's 630 pages long. Must be quite scintillating reading. But he more or less confessed that the Florida Republican Party has worked tirelessly, overtime, hammer and tongs, hand over fist, to make sure that persons of color in Florida can't vote. I mean, it's out in the open now. The Republican Party in Florida is openly involved in voter suppression.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's no questioning that. They are very open about it, and why not? They can afford to be open about it. I mean, you know, the same thing in Pennsylvania. You heard the Pennsylvania House. What is it? President of the Pennsylvania House saying, and that'll, you know, the voter registration law will help defeat Obama. I mean, that's all it's about. Why kid yourself?
Yeah, regardless of whether or not it's good for the country.
Oh, as if that matters to anybody.
Yeah, silly Bob. Yeah,
that doesn't matter to anybody. Good for the country, please. Unfortunately, Bob, being around this so long, I know you know about my cynicism about the whole political affair now, and I know you have some of it yourself. You know, I was just thinking a bit. You told me the other day in a text that you were going to go visit Senator Sherrod Brown.
Yes.
And I see he's, you know, he's got his hands full in his race there, although Obama today, as of today, is up 8 points in Ohio. But what a terrible, terrible thing that would be Sherrod Brown is absolutely one of our finest United States senators. And
he is. He's a very, very good man. And I'm surprised. I'm looking at a photograph right now of his challenger. I don't know if you recall the movie. Have you ever seen There Will Be Blood with Daniel Day-Lewis?
No.
It's a movie about the early days of oil prospecting. And there's this really skeedy, slimy, greasy, nasty huckster of a preacher in it, and played brilliantly by an actor named Paul Dano. And I looked at this Ohio Senate nominee, Josh Mandel, and I thought, dear God, it's Paul Dano from There Will Be Blood. And it turns out, now this is the guy that they've set up to oppose Sherrod Brown guy.
Yeah.
He is deeply invested in short-selling U.S. Treasury bonds.
Well, no.
In other words, he's gambling in favor of the failure of the government.
That's right. What every good Republican should do.
But I'm sure he stands up every time they play Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA, right?
Oh, yes. Tears running down his cheeks. I'm reminded of a photograph of you and Senator Sherrod Brown taken on a cold January day outside of the Capitol building. I don't know if you remember that or not, but I do indeed.
It was January the 21st, 2009, just across the street from the Russell Senate building.
Yeah, and I don't know that you had met him before that, and he stopped and talked to us for a while, and I know you've been to his office, and I've been there many times. He's a great guy. I just love him. There are not a lot of politicians I trust, but Sherrod Brown is certainly one that I do.
I have said for several months now, possibly a year now, that there's a whole lot of watch the birdie going on with the presidential race, that's where most people will naturally focus their attention, but that the real risk to the nation is a House of Representatives, as lunatic as this one is, Guy, coupled with a Senate that has gone over to the dark side.
That scares me to no end. I mean, people like Sherrod Brown, people like Claire McCaskill out in Missouri, they're going after those seats hard. And if they should end up with a majority in the Senate, I don't know. I just don't know. I'm very, very. I must admit, I'm a bit discouraged over it. I really am.
It's nerve wracking, frankly, Guy.
It is. It certainly is. Hear my little puppy dog barking in the background there.
I was going to say that sounds like one of the Guy James political consultant attack dogs.
Yeah. Well, we're up in the old studio and fondly remembering the days on Head On Radio Network and all the work that we've done. And Bob, I do want to say one thing before we go any further. I'm really proud of you and the work you're doing. I don't often pop up and say anything, but I do keep track of what you're doing, and the mountaintop removal program and the bill they're trying to get up. There's one thing I wanted to ask you. Is Sherrod Brown firmly in your camp on that?
We're trying to get him there, Guy. Right. We've spent the vast majority of our time working the House of Representatives side, because that's where we had an ally who was willing to introduce a bill. And, of course, that ally was none other than Dennis Kucinich, the friend of the beleaguered, if you will. He and another progressive member of the House named Louise Slaughter stood up early on and said, yeah, we're going to do this. And so that's where most of our effort's been. But we're going, like I said, we're going over to the Senate side, and we're going to try to get a companion bill introduced, and Sherrod Brown, Bernie Sanders, people like that, are at the top of our list of people to get to talk to.
Did we lose you?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, Okay, okay. I keep getting these beeps on the phone. I don't know what.
No, I think Agnes is engineering on the fly. No, we're in good shape.
Okay.
But no, we've got it. We want to get it introduced in the Senate, and we want to start out with, you know, with good progressives like I said, like Sherrod Brown and Bernie Sanders up in Michigan. Why do I forget these names, Guy? I know her so well. You know her even better. The wonderful progressive senator from Michigan. But those are people. It's incredibly difficult to get through the door with these folks. But once you do, and you start telling them what's going on here in Appalachia, they look at you and shudder in horror. It is the truth. They do. Oh dear, we've lost Guy. Okay, so. Are you trying to get him? Oh dear! All right, stand by, everybody. We're gonna get Guy back. This is what happens when you work on a 150-year-old or a technology that's 150, 125, 100 years old. Coal-fired power grid BS. I guess there's several thousand people without power in West Virginia, and there were, as of last night, several hundred thousand people out without power after another storm had blasted through. But remember, everybody, there's no global warming. Yeah, Debbie Stabenow. Thank you. Thank you, Sparky. That's exactly who I was thinking of.
No global warming.
Yeah, no. And Guy is back. Yeah, and Debbie Stabenow. But what I was saying is, it's incredibly difficult to get into these offices. But we are continuing to make the effort, and I'm hoping that people like Sherrod Brown, Debbie Stabenow, Barbara Boxer will eventually listen to us, because this is an issue that transcends the region itself. We're talking about the integrity of the entire region, but the integrity of the nation as well. And one of the things that we hope that the AIC Act, H.R. 5959, will do, Guy, is provide a template whereby other communities that are being poisoned by these profiteering monsters can stand up for themselves as well.
Oh yes.
And by the way, you're getting fan mail. Dr. John in New York just wrote in and said, "So great to hear you." And I've got a question here from Kevin out in Colorado Springs for you, Guy. He asks, "Are there parts of Florida that are safer to live in, i.e., more liberal than conservative local politicians and people? In other words, is it all like Collier County, or are there some little pockets of normalcy left?" Guy, do we have you? Well, we'll probably reconnect in a moment. Guy stepped back from doing a daily show a while back simply because it became impossible to do so. And Lord, don't we miss him? He went out and broadcasted live for the Horn from the 2008 Democratic National Convention in Denver. And those archives are still out there, and it was amazing. And we'll try to. Well, hopefully, we'll get Guy back on the line. I don't know what's going on here. It's most frustrating. I'm gonna see if the. Uh, see if I can get. Okay, are you back, Guy?
Yeah, it's a Republican conspiracy.
Oh, I have no doubt whatsoever. You know, anytime I start complaining about phone or internet service, the show goes down. So people are listening. But no, right before I lost you, Kevin from Colorado Springs had written in asking, is the entire state of Florida weird like you're describing, or are there any pockets of relative normalcy?
Yeah, there are. Like I said, I hate to use Miami and normal in the same sentence, but it's a much better political climate for liberal Democrats over there. Orlando's a little bit better area. But, man, you get into these... I mean, let's be honest here. Naples, Florida is a obscenely wealthy town. Until you've driven down Gulf Drive on Naples, in Naples, I mean, it's like, oh my God, bitch.
Lots of folks with that Jed Clampett walking around money, is that what we're talking about?
Oh yeah. And, you know, they do not take, talked to my friend Gene today, who is running for Collier County, Florida, chairman of the Democratic Party. And we were talking about it, how the Republicans here do not take us seriously. They really don't. I mean, we get no mention in any of the papers. We get no mention, period. And they don't respond to anything. They don't have to. It's really an amazing situation. I've seen it now for, what, 15 years, I guess, and I'm still in awe of how they've just lock, stock, and barrel got this place sewed up.
But by the same token, nothing has changed also in the sense that broadcast media, and of course this is a theme that has had real resonance in conversations we've had over the years, broadcast media is a locked down one party autocratic. What do you call it? There's no opposition on the radio, is there?
No, there's nothing. Here locally, there's the one station in Fort Myers, Wink WNOG, is 24-hour hardcore right wing. Every day, you know, Glenbeck and Limbaugh, you know, the crew, even Mark Levin at night, and it's just nonstop. You don't hear anybody talk about anybody other than the right wing radio here. And you know, when I had my show here on Wink WNOG, the last thing I heard from them was, your show doesn't conform to the needs of our conservative audience. In other words, to hell with anybody who might not be a conservative Republican. We don't care. And it's still that way here. Nobody's cracked it.
Well, I'm just curious. What has the coverage of the Trayvon Martin case been like down there?
I hear a lot around here that people think that poor Zimmerman is really getting it stuck to him, that he's being convicted in the media, that we don't know all the facts, and that kid probably was a nasty boy, and you know, you're going to hear mostly a defense of that here, you know, without a doubt. And I'll just say it, yes, I live here, but if anybody thinks in Southwest Florida, and this may be a terrible thing to say, but if you don't mind, I'm going to say it. If anybody thinks a black man is going to get the benefit of the doubt or even fair treatment in a big case in Florida, I've got some, you know, swampland stuff, and there's plenty of that here.
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm thinking of Byron Della Beckwith in Mississippi, and. I expect no justice. I'll be honest, I expect no justice whatsoever for Trayvon Martin.
No, I really don't either. There's going to be a way to weasel, I just think he'll probably, you know, get away with all that, as will old Joe Arpaio out in Phoenix. It's just something, you know, inherent in the Republican Party.
I mean, I have these nightmares, Guy. I can see a couple of years down the road after, say, an acquittal of George Zimmerman. I can see maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the road, Zimmerman for House.
I mean, I'm laughing, but it's entirely possible.
Oh, don't laugh. I mean, isn't Joe the Plumber running for something?
Man, we think alike. That was the next words out of my mouth. Yeah. I don't know how he's doing. I admit I haven't kept track of Joe. He's such a highly intelligent, very well-spoken gentleman. I say that with my tongue firmly planted in cheek.
Well, you know, that's one of the beauties of listening to Guy James is that, I mean, you make certain red wines seem positively lush by comparison to your Midwestern dryness, my friend. I get it completely. But it is, I tell you what, it is a zoo here in D.C. too. I mean, first of all, it's probably, I'm guessing it's hotter up here than it is down there right now.
I agree with you. I think it is.
You know, you probably get a little breeze off the Gulf every now and then. Well, it got near 100 degrees in downtown D.C. yesterday, and I would say that the humidity was probably approaching 100% as well. I mean, nasty.
I have always said that Washington, D.C. is the coldest place I've ever been and the hottest place I've ever been. There's something about that city when the weather's a little bit on the nasty side. Oh, my God.
And so, you know, into the middle of that, I told people the other night, and like I said, I'm not blowing smoke at anybody when I say this, but I walk around with you in my head when I'm here. And the other day when we were walking across, it was Bo and Ferg and me. It was just me and Ferg. And at a distance, I saw this big poster of Barack Obama, and I couldn't see what was on it. And I was thinking, 10-1, this is either a LaRoucher or a teabagger. And I got up on top of it, and lo and behold, the Barack Obama poster had a Hitler mustache. I'm not kidding, Guy. A Hitler mustache.
That warms the cockles of my heart. It certainly does.
The lunatics just—they don't come out; they stay out around here. And that was right—you know—that was right up there, catty-cornered on Pennsylvania Avenue, across from the Library of Congress. You know exactly where I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Now they're not afraid. They're not afraid to come out of the caves now. They're out of the caves. They're doing their thing. The older I get, I think we're supposed to get wiser as we get older, and I don't know, maybe I am, but there's some things that are just so disconcerting to me as I get older. I find myself understanding a lot of things even less. I know you're a student, and for example, you know, this past week, the horrors of what took place in Aurora. I don't know. I'm a student of history, and I know you are as well. And I think we all know, those of us that want to just read the truth, even in the Federalist Papers, I think we know why the Second Amendment, for example, was written the way it was. I think we all know that as clear-thinking people. You know, to raise an army quick, we needed to, because the damn British were going to come back, and we had a way of defending ourselves. Everybody had a right to keep and bear arms. Fine. What the hell has that got to do with today? And I hear the NRA and the hardcore conservative Republicans and Democrats, I might add, who are scared to death of the NRA, talking about freedom. We have to have our freedom to keep these guns. Oh, I'm not against a guy having a shotgun for hunting, but come on, this is getting out of hand. And you know, when it gets to the point with your family, you don't want to even go to the movies because you think there could be another Aurora happening, or you know, you don't want to go out to eat with somebody. You're looking around. You're looking around for your safety. And, you know, that's a lot of things, but it isn't freedom.
No, it is not freedom, Guy. And I can tell you this much. It's a fact. You know, Ferg's up here with me, and I was thinking about trying to do something nice for him. And I thought, you know, maybe we'll go to a movie. And then I thought, no, I do not wish to go to a movie in Washington, D.C. No.
You know, and so we're living under the oppression of the NRA. Yes, hell, let everybody have some automatics or semi-automatics and 100 cartridge magazines and all that. And the part that just confounds me, I talked to some people today about it, just adamant, because they're a Republican, they will defend that to the very end. And I just, I don't know, it's getting to me.
Well, it does me too, and it makes me really cranky and nasty and unpleasant to be around, because what we have, and what I said a week ago tonight, one, any discussion of these horrors is frustrating because no change is going to come out of them, and two, it has been made abundantly clear to us that their right to own weapons that would only be used in warfare trumps a 6-year-old girl's right to become a 7-year-old girl. And
she's only a 6-year-old, though. Come on.
Right. Yeah.
There's lots of 6-year-olds.
Thomas Jefferson done said that the Tree of Liberty had to be watered from time to time with the blood of toddlers.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I don't know, Bob. I'm not very happy the way things are going.
I don't run around, for what, 9 years, 10 years, whatever. I was never not 1 minute scared of a 6'6" tall, wild-eyed Arab on a portable dialysis machine. I know I was supposed to have been, Guy, but I never could work up a good scare.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm scared. I am scared to death. I mean, I'm scared to where my liver quivers of these NRA people and these Tea Party people. Lord, yeah, God, they terrify me.
Oh, they do me too.
I don't know if you saw the news. I don't know what if you saw the news today, but I was talking about, you know, movies and stuff. Well, lo and behold, not too awful far from here, over in Maryland, my Maryland, isn't that the name of their anthem?
That's right.
Well, over in Maryland, a guy was taken down. Well, not taken down, but he was taken into custody or observation or whatever. He got fired over at Pitney Bowes. His name's Neil E. Trescott. When they arrested him, Guy, he was wearing a T-shirt that said, "Guns don't kill people, I do." And after he got canned, he said, "I'm a joker. I'm going to load my guns and blow everybody up." And when the cops showed up at his house, Guy, here's the fun part. He had 25 firearms and 40 boxes of ammunition.
Oh. Well, he has to protect himself, Bob. I mean, come on, be a little fair here.
I understand. You need 25 firearms and 40 boxes of ammunition in case the government ever becomes tyrannical and that one comes for our God-given right to keep an arm bears. I don't. Is he just going to load them all and sit there and shoot them till they're empty and pick up another one and shoot that? I don't know. I don't know. Because I don't understand this whole defending freedom against the tyrannical government thing. Because last I checked, Guy, that's called treason.
Oh, well, you know, we had a perfect case of that here the day before yesterday. We have a lot of murders here in Fort Myers, a lot of murders. And a gentleman that sells meat and lobster tails and that from door to door with the truck, the freezer truck, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled up to a house in our neighborhood, not my immediate neighborhood, but he pulled up to a house here, and the owner meets him with a gun and says that he was afraid of the guy and shot him once in the shoulder, knocked him down on the ground, and shot him in the back of the head and killed him. Standing his ground, and the weapon the guy had was a lobster and a cell phone. And he's going to go for the standing your ground thing. And they found out he had 12 or 14 weapons in the house and a real cache of ammunition. And he threatened to kill people before. He threatened to kill meter readers before and got off. And yet we don't want to take, you don't take any guns away from that guy. Just don't want to do it. Yeah. Well, how long ago was it we hooked up in D.C.? The last trip
was the end of January.
Yeah, what was the first time? Was it that time?
The first time was the night of January the 20th, 2009.
That was the first time?
Yep. Now, we had worked, you had covered these conferences and events and stuff, and you'd been at the 2008 Democratic National Convention in Denver, of course, and we'd worked remotely, you know, with your show and carrying you on the horn stream and things like that, and we'd produced, just like Agnes is producing us both. This is the first time Agnes has ever produced a program where you, Guy, are in one place and I'm in another, and we're both coming through the West Virginia studio. So it's another signal moment in horn history. But yeah, to January 20th, 2009, that night that it took, what, an hour and 45 minutes to go from New Jersey Avenue to New Hampshire Avenue, was it?
Well, and of course, there's the time that Bob and I met our respective hero, broadcaster, and Bob got his picture taken with him in that room. I like to call it right outside the Titanic room there. You know where I mean, Bob.
Yep.
Where they had the Titanic hearings. And you got to have your picture taken with your friend and mine, great liberal broadcaster for many, many years, Mr. Ed Schultz.
Yes, you bloggers should be writing about what he says.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that. I remember the picture that you had. I took the picture, and it turned out so well. You looked at him with adoration, Bob. Well, not really. And then Bob and I went to a speech that what's his name from the AFL.
No, it was Leo Girard from
Leo Girard introducing Mr. Schultz as the best friend that unions ever had. Anyway, it was an interesting day.
Yeah, I especially liked the part where you looked at me and said, "Bob, I'll be out in the hall. If I stay here any longer, I'm going to vomit."
That's right. I'd forgotten about that. Yes.
That was after the you bloggers comment.
Yeah,
there's an element of, you know, for some people there's an element of cluelessness, and you know, whether it's you bloggers or, you know, we've given you people all the information you need.
Yeah.
You know, I guess we people have learned all we need to know about how Willard Romney feels about the English too, or the UK.
Yes.
Holy cow.
Man.
Does this blow your mind, guy? This guy wants Willett Romney, the one of the few things that the president can do that nobody else can do is conduct diplomacy.
Yeah.
And so his idea of diplomacy is to go and insult the United Kingdom and the English people.
You got to look at it the other way around. All the conservatives in this country, they will look at that. I guess he told them damn limeys, showed them what's up. That Romney, he's American. He showed them damn limeys what's up and who's the boss. Yeah, he sure did.
Well, you know, somebody after he had insulted him, real good guy, I guess other people went out there and started researching other things that he had said about the British. One of which was, it's a very small island filled with people who make things nobody wants to buy.
Yeah.
But he does cherish our Anglo-Saxon relationship. Now,
yeah.
Are you one of the? Are you? I'm not sure, guy. I need to double check. Are you one of those Anglo-Saxons that Willard likes?
Well, I'm an Anglo-Saxon, I guess. My family came over here in 1685 and got kicked out of England. Brought the
bunch
house
of,
with
bunch
them.
Of damn troublemakers, right?
Yeah, they brought their house with them, tore it down, brought it with them on the ship, and rebuilt it out there at the end of the subway in Washington D.C. out by Dulles. That's where the homestead was, and that was in 1685. So, yes, I am one of them. There, people.
Okay, well, I'm going to need somebody who can be like a liaison to Willard if he gets to be president and stuff, because. I ran off down the family history, and I keep running across Scots people and the occasional American Indian, and I don't think I get to be one of his. I guess I don't understand our precious Anglo-Saxon heritage any more than our president does.
I gotta tell you, I don't care about it. You know, it's one of those things I hear a lot of people. I know some Italians and some Greek people and British people, and you know we are truly an amalgamation of Europe and other places here, and a lot of them are really strong about their heritage. You know, yes, I'm this and I'm that. I my family been here so long. I don't really care. Just you know what I always tell everybody what I am. I'm human. That's it. I'm another human that lives on this planet with other humans and. That's good enough for me.
Well, wait a minute. Don't take it much further, guy, because if you, you know, the little right-wing weirdos are constantly listening to this program because, well, we know they are. And you want to be careful talking that human stuff because the next thing you know, some Romney surrogate will be out there saying, Barack Obama just doesn't understand what it is to be human.
Yeah, that's right. They will. They can turn that around. They, of course, we know now that they can do anything they want to with recordings. They can insert and delete and make anything Obama says say anything they want him to say. And they have sure been doing that.
You know, it's almost as though they took the Andrew Breitbart, James O'Keefe, how to edit videotape class
and yes.
made A in it.
Yeah. I'd forgotten Breitbart's talent for that. I'd almost forgotten. He's gone, but not quite forgotten.
Remember the selective editing of Shirley Sherrod?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's fascinating to get away with this, but let's face it, the American electorate, by and large, the ones that hang on every word of him and Limbaugh and those guys, they're idiots. I hate to say that about my fellow Americans, but If you sit you drink from that bowl every day that they put out for you, that nice milk that the Republican serves them on the Limbaugh show and the Glenn Beck, my God, he scares me. If you follow that every day and you know people repeat the platitudes every day, I hear them. You're just plain stupid. I'm sorry, and I'm not going to talk to you. I, you know, when anybody gets to learn that stuff to me, I'm afraid I have gone over the edge, and I just plain tell them, you know, you're just too stupid for me to talk to. And that makes some people angry, but I'm not going to waste my time with that anymore. I'm just not going to do it.
No, never. Because that's what I was going to say. You know, you want to talk about weird. Driving around a place like Alabama and seeing Willard Romney signs in yards. Now, you know, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. I know what it's like. And we got our shells from conservative family values, and I reckon we're just going to have to suck it up and vote for that Mormon because we can't take no more of that one in our White House.
And after all, we just might be like him someday and get this whole pile of money. We might. It could happen.
We're one lottery ticket away, Guy James.
It's fascinating to me that it's akin to having a pickpocket. You catch him with his hand in your pocket. You catch him red-handed. You grab his hand and you pull it out of your pocket. Say, here, let me help you. Here's the billfold. Man, you don't have to get in my pocket and get it. I'll give it to you. I'll willingly give it to you. I've been doing that for all my life. You want my money? Take it. And that's what people are saying to them. I'm truly fascinated by it. I was a psych major, and I got to tell you, some of these things fly in the face of what we thought was a good education in psych years ago. Really.
Do you feel like you could just turn some of this stuff in and say, hand me the doctorate now?
Yeah. Yes, I've done many years of research, and here's what I have found, and it ain't pretty.
No, are you, generally speaking, as nervous about the future of this country as I think most of the Horn family are, and as I am? This is, I can't, you know, Eric Cantor came out today, defending 1L Michelle Bachmann's assault on an American, you know, it's a return to McCarthyism. And what happens to 21st century? Can 21st century America tolerate a return to McCarthyism, Guy, and still be America?
Yeah. That's what's happening. That's what's going to continue to happen. If we, and I've been saying this, I sound like a broken record, but if we don't take back a lot of the media, if we don't negate what the right-wingers have done with talk radio, if we don't bother to make inroads into that, we're done. We're just done. And a lot of people think, oh, I'm overemphasizing. I'm not. Because that's where America is getting their talking points. That's where they're getting their voting points. It sickens me. And I am absolutely convinced, Bob, I hate to be this way. I do. But I think we're done. I honest to God think we're done if the Republicans take over, that we are going to have a true corporatocracy, oligarchy. It's going to be serfs. We're going to be serfs.
There's two tiers of terror here. One is that one, that scenario I mentioned to you a little bit ago, where you've got a lunatic House and a lunatic Senate. That's terrifying enough. Where a Ryan budget originates in the House and goes like a goose all the way through the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only bulwark you've got is Barack Obama. But no. The other part of that is because it's possible. It seems impossible, but then again, you and I were watching it in 2000, and we thought, you know, there's no way the United States of America is gonna ever elect a lunatic like George W. Bush. I mean, we're better than that, please.
Oh, I tell you what, Bob, I was on a cruise for his reelection, and when it came down to him won that election, my friends and I that were on that ship, we were having breakfast, and we just sat and didn't say a word, just stared at each other like, oh my God, that didn't really happen. but it did.
So imagine, you know, imagine the unimaginable. What, you know, what happened? What does the United States look like with 4 years, say, of a Republican House, and not just a Republican House? I mean, I'm not talking about a Republican House full of old Nelson Rockefellers or, you know, that kind of, no. Just crazier than a sprayed roach Republicans in the House. The same thing in control of the Senate and Willard Romney.
Oh, I can't imagine. You know, Bob, I think the sky's the limit where they could go. I don't think they'd leave. They would undo everything. Hell, I think they'd dump Social Security and Medicare and totally gut this country. I know they would. And yet we've got people that wanting to keep them in office, put more of them in office.
And I'm sure the teabaggers would be out there as they were doing it, saying, "Put your government hands on my Medicare."
Oh, there was. I just saw a cartoon today. It showed some schmuck with the, you know, his Social Security check and his Medicare check in his pocket, and you know, saying, "Keep your damn hands off my guns," and you know. It's fascinating to me. It really is.
It's fascinating the way a trip to the zoo is fascinating.
Yeah.
But the thing is, all the, you know, like you walk into the monkey house in the zoo, or you know, you go into the herpetarium and you look at all the snakes slithering around, and they're behind glass, and so you can sit there and sort of transcend your horror to look at them. But you know what? Out here, I can go out my door where I am, and walk 500 feet and find somebody standing around with a picture of an allegedly aborted fetus next to a picture of Barack Obama with a Hitler mustache.
Yeah.
And that's not like going to the zoo, because that's like going to the zoo and having them lock the door behind you where you have to stay in there, and then they open all the gates.
I'm afraid of some of these animals. You know, how stupid. Let me ask a question to the general public, the listening audience, and probably those who aren't listening at all. But how stupid, how absolutely ignorant do you have to be to follow Michelle Bachmann? What kind of a moron are you? 100% of you. That follow Michelle Bachmann and her every word. I mean, it's like I've got the Muslim Brotherhood hiding in the bushes out in front of my house. The woman's nuts. The woman's nutter than a damn fruitcake. And yet she's the second leading fundraiser in the Republican Party, and she's got an army behind her. How crazy do you have to be? I see things like that. I see her talking. I think, oh well, you know. I look at it as comedy. Oh, that's funny, and to think there are millions of people that take what she says seriously. Really?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's funny. It's funny until they get power, and the way I described it is that if the Democratic Party had any real strategery sense, they would put up signs in her district saying, "This election is not about Michelle Bachmann. This election is about you. Because if you return her to office, we know that you're as crazy and hateful and ugly as she is."
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the woman's a nut. She's absolutely a nutcase. All you got to do is listen to her for 5 minutes, and you know there's something seriously wrong with this woman's brain. And yet, millions of people. Oh, she's and Palin too. You know, she's still hanging around.
She Michelle accused Keith Ellison, with whom we now have some history. What a fine man he is, Guy James.
Oh no, Bob, you've got the wrong idea. That guy.
She called him a member of the. She said he's mobbed up. She called him a member of the mafia.
Well, you know, Bob, I mean, come on, you can't be too careful. she's the leader of the clown band. There's no question about it. She's I find her absolutely amazing. I do. What the hell is wrong? You know, just ask what the hell's wrong with Kansas, but what the hell's wrong with Minnesota? Of course, they have had some interesting people in office up there, but so we know they're not quite on the ball when it comes to politics. But
speaking of whom, can I tell you a little secret? Because, you know, nobody's listening. It'll stay between us.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Because, you know, I've got these bad habits and everything. I walked out two mornings in a row. I've walked out of the apartment here. And I've been standing there when a guy comes out in a real nice looking suit, says good morning. And the first morning I went, you know, that sort of double take. That, and then the second morning, and I realized who it was. I think I live in the same building here as David Vitter.
What?
Yeah.
David Vitter. Well. Oh man.
I thought he was supposed to be living over at C Street or something.
Yeah, well, you know, he's not over there anymore. He got all the.
But you know, it's Friday night. I'm tempted to just ride the elevator and wait till and you know, just look out every floor until I see the hookers, and then I'm going to the party.
Oh my God, David Vitter party. Yeah, it would be good. That'd be really good.
I mean, Agnes knows that I never would, but I mean, it's bound to be a good party.
I would go. I would absolutely go. We could sit in the corner and have a lot of fun talking.
Don't you know?
We've done that sort of thing before.
Well, that's
not,
true.
Not at that kind of a party, but I remember one night Bob and I were at a tapas bar in Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh?
Yeah. You remember that?
I do indeed.
Oh, yeah. That was a good night.
It was salsa night. And I don't mean the stuff in the dish. I mean the dancing.
Right. And Bob and I just sat back in the corner stuffing our faces in amazement at all these women and men out there dancing the salsa and the tango and I don't know what all. It was a beautiful thing.
Oh, it was, and the music was amazing.
It was, and the ladies were all dressed up, and it was this kind of thing Bob and I do. We used to order a whole table full of food, and watch the dancing,
I do have to tell you, it was kind of a rotten thing to do. It was several months ago. You know, you and I went to the home office last time you were here.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought Ferg along a couple of months later, and he had just had his wisdom teeth out, so chewing was a bit of a chore. But, I mean, he wouldn't be held back. He wanted to go to the home office.
Uh-huh.
And I have – you remember that dazed and confused look we both had on our faces after the first trip to the home office, Guy?
Oh, yeah.
Where we walked out of the building with our centers of gravity completely shifted.
We were food stoned.
Yeah, we were. We were food stoned. You're absolutely right. Well, I took Ferg, and I got to sit and watch it happen for the very first time to somebody else.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and he was having to chew kind of slow and everything, and. You know, I explained to him what happens when you turn that disc over to green.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think he took
there
me seriously.
Goes. The Meat Express is on its way.
Exactly. And, would you like some top round? How about some bottom round, sir? Sir, are you ready for the filet? Sir, would you like the Parmesan-encrusted pork loin?
Well, I took my wife to the one in Miami Beach recently.
Uh-huh.
And it's the home office away from home, and it's like watching a 5-year-old on Christmas morning. That's kind of what it's like, the awe and the expressions on the face. As much as I told my wife Bess about it, she still couldn't understand until she finally sat down and was served. Oh, it was a beautiful thing.
Well, it's with Ferg, I eventually had to look at him and say, "Dear God, boy, turn that disc over to Red so they'll leave you alone and let you eat."
Well, you know, I must tell the audience, and I guess we don't want to go on too much about that, but I do have to tell the audience that Bob isn't quite above board when we go to home office. I think he has a form of, I hate to use the word cheating, but several times I have witnessed Bob eat a gargantuan amount of meat, okay, after eating a gargantuan amount of salad bar. And I'm sitting there trying to keep up. I'm doing my best, and I'm eating long, and Bob says, "I gotta go out for a smoke." What? Isn't that... I don't know, but I think there's something wrong with that deal.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's the intermezzo. That's the interlude.
I think if you look in the bylaws, paragraph 6, section 4, I think there's
subsections, little letter I, paragraph Roman numeral 3, yeah.
"Thou shalt not leave in the middle of the meal and then come back in all rested and refreshed and ready anew for another helping." I mean, so I just want to let everybody know that
it's pacing.
Yeah. I understand.
You know, when you're running the marathon and you blow past and they hand you that glass of water and you throw it on your face and you drink a little, that's that.
Yes. Well, it is.
I mean, it's wonderful when we get to go there. Granted, it's no Chick-fil-A guy, but.
You know, Bob, I don't eat chicken.
Well, I was going to say, because I know you're heavily emotionally invested in this whole debate over chicken, considering you won't even be in the same county with one.
No, I learned when I was a kid that I didn't like to be around chickens, and so I am not. Maybe it's interesting, maybe not for all of our listeners. And gosh, I do. It's good to be on the chat room and see all of our old friends on there. Gosh, it really is. But Guy does not eat anything that swims or flies. Nothing. And so that limits my menu, but it also makes...
Well, I mean, but let's be fair, you also don't eat anything that bleats.
That what?
Bleats.
Bleats?
Bleats, B-L-E-A-T-S. So, you know, no lamb, no sheep, no mutton, no goat.
No lamb, no. No broccoli, asparagus, cauliflower, all those weird vegetables. I don't eat any of that. I'm not as bad as Rick, though.
No, you're not. You know, that is the absolute God's unvarnished and unfly-blown truth. It's No, you're not. No, you are not. I mean, I've seen...
No.
You'll walk into a Thai restaurant, you'll walk into an Indian restaurant, you're not afraid of styles.
Don't bring that up.
Don't bring out the chicken. Don't bring out the lamb. Don't bring out the fish. No shrimp. No crabs. Right.
And I've learned to stay away from Indian restaurants too.
Yeah, because I'll have another story to tell for 15 more years.
They're probably still talking about that in there.
I walked in there. I had occasion to be up in DuPont Circle, and I just saw the restaurant. I walked in for a second, and the guy just looked at me and said, "No beef." No. He's not here today.
Yeah, he's not here. Let me in.
Dr. John up in New York dropped a note a minute ago. I thought you'd appreciate this guy. He said, under the subject line, Bachman with power.
Oh.
We've got very good examples, Dr. John says, of the dangers of right-wing cults of personality.
Oh.
Run a risk. We run a risk, he says, if we just laugh her off. And that's the thing. You can want to laugh, but you dare not.
Yeah. We had people way back in the 50s making fun of Joe McCarthy. They made fun of him. Well, his demise is well known, but he sure played hell with the American political system while he was in power the way he was. He certainly did. Nut or not, he worked America over really good. I don't know. These people do bother me. I really wish the best for you, and knowing you the way I do, I get angry with the so-called liberal media, if there is such a thing. Its presence is so small. But I watch people, and I know I'll step on some toes here, but you know how much I care about that. I get upset with current TV, and I get upset with other so-called liberal networks or whatever. They keep recycling the same people. Tell me, somebody tell me that you couldn't put Bob Kincaid on in the evening at prime time and have him put out one hell of a radio program that would interest the rank and file Democrats. Not play footsie with any politicians or anything. Just get on and be honest with, instead of recycling old comedians and old broadcasters and all this, why not get some fresh new faces? And of course, I mean, to the country, Bob would be a fresh new face on TV or radio. And there are others as well in our camp that would make great broadcasters on radio or TV, and yet we keep recycling the same old things, and I am so tired of it. I really am. I remember, I don't know, nearly 10 years ago, remember this little thing where they got together and started out the, I can't even think of the name of it now.
Air America.
No, it wasn't Air America. The one that Debbie.
Oh, Democracy Radio?
Yeah, Democracy Radio, Tom Athens. I remember going to that very first meeting and audition type thing for that and hearing the biggest load of bull I ever heard in my life. And of course, we all know where that went. And
yep.
We all know where America went. And they all did it by recycling the old standbys and bringing comedians on and all that instead of straight talkers. And I don't know what the answer is as far as the money, but I certainly would like the Democrats for a change to be serious about this. I mean, I you and I are not geniuses. Well, maybe you.
Oh, far from it. In my case, I think you may be a little closer than I, guy.
I don't think. Well, let's argue about that for a while. No, but I'm ready for some real people. I like Rachel, and yeah. I like
Chris Hayes is a joy to watch.
Chris is the man. There isn't a smarter guy. For those of you that have not been around Chris, there isn't a smarter guy within 500 miles of Washington, D.C. than Chris Hayes. And he is, you remember the time, was it the time you were on a panel in Pittsburgh that Chris Hayes was on panel too, and to ask him to bring out about the Obamacare and explain it? And in 5 minutes, he stood there and nailed it so that anybody could understand it. Nobody's done that but Chris, as far as I'm concerned.
No. No, he needs, you know, he needs to get out of, he needs to get out of the MSNBC weekend ghetto.
Yeah. Exactly. He's a prime timer. He's an interesting guy. He's a smart guy. He's not condescending to anybody. He knows he's smart, but God, is he smart. He's a smart guy, and he's got a memory like, you know, I sat and talked to him at lunch one day, and I'm a lot older than him, and there's nothing he doesn't know about politics. I tried to get some things past him, and I could not.
Tried to slip a few things about the Rutherford B. Hayes administration past him, did you?
Oh, come on. He was from Fremont, Ohio, yes. He was just from up the road from me. Of course, Warren Harding is just up the road from where I live, too. So, don't tell me I don't know. Chris is good.
You're so right. You are so right, and thank you for the kind words on my behalf. But they go so much further. You and I have been having this conversation off and on for a lot of years now, because one of the running gags we established early on is that between the two of us, we have had some of the finest doors in the United States in the so-called liberal social circles of the United States slammed in our faces.
Yeah.
I mean, it's labor, it's environmental, it's gender rights, and everybody's out there struggling just to hold fast. And when you go to them and say, you know, could you take a little bit out of the printed pencils and packaged sunflower seed and stale donut budget and support some progressive broadcasting? We'd be happy to provide you with some guests.
It's so little. It's so little in the broad scheme of things. And I hate to be a kind of dead horse, but it's fascinating to me. It really is. It's just, and I know a lot of people, I step on people's toes when I talk about Ed Schultz. Ed Schultz is no more of a liberal broadcaster, never was. Never had any inclination whatsoever to be a liberal broadcaster until the money was stuck in front of his face. And you can tell him he knows I said that. He wrote me a nasty, nasty letter one time, for saying that, but it's the truth. And I just like to slap somebody upside the head, Al Gore and everybody else, say, hey, how about trying it our way for once? Let's pick a good lineup and go with it for a while and see what you think.
Can you imagine, you know, and for a while there we were doing it, Guy. But people have to go off and people have to make livings and people have to keep roofs over their heads. By the way, John Fox down in Australia has signed into the chat room, and he just said to send you big old hugs. We were doing that for a little while, and it worked, and it can work, and there are people who could be pulled together organizationally into something where you can have 24 hours a day of broadcasting and not one of them ever be a rerun.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And on the day we do that, Guy, that's the day we begin to change the media landscape. And you know that far better than I do.
Yeah, been begging them, and like you said, have had some pretty darn good doors slammed in my face when I was out looking for, you know, and I know the listeners here today, they probably know the situation. Let's say you want to go see Senator Joe Smith. I don't even know if there's a Joe Smith right now. But anyway, you want to go see Senator Joe Smith. So you go up to the door in his office, and you look inside, and in the waiting room, there's about 9 guys sitting there with briefcases and suits. And they are your lobbyists. And you'll play hell getting in to see the senator before any of those lobbyists do, because you don't have a bundle of cash, you don't have any big folks behind you, you don't... you're not going to get through with your little radio spiel that you want to give, and of course he doesn't care if you give it anyway, because most of them don't recognize even the need. I continue to be fascinated by that. I really do.
Consider this, Guy. You know exactly where we are. I walked two blocks over, because there's a little bakery where we buy baguettes instead of, you know, we eat in here. We joke around about the home office and stuff, but we eat in here because we're operating a shoestring. But there was this great big humongous building in some of the most expensive real estate on earth, and across the front of the building it says Heritage Foundation. I might as well have been little wet behind the ears Luke Skywalker driving it, flying past the Death Star.
Yeah, man.
I just you can feel the evil that just radiates out of that place. Now, on the other hand, where is the great big building in prime real estate country in Washington, D.C. that says Campaign for America's Future across the country?
I've been to the Campaign for America's Future offices. Have you?
Yes, I have, and that's my point.
It isn't exactly across the front of a building, is it? No.
Well, no, it's not. And the point is, you walk in, and it's not like there's an ice bar. It's not like there's a tray of ice with beluga caviar sitting in it either.
No, and they operate on a shoestring. And correct me if I'm wrong. They didn't even have enough money to have a radio row at their big function this year.
They haven't had a radio row for two, maybe three years now, Guy.
Yeah, that's right. Don't have the funds. Can you imagine a Republican telling you that they weren't going to have a radio row at their function so they didn't have the money? that's a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's. Yeah, tell me another one.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, they get it. We don't. I mean, just, you mentioned it earlier. You know what we're doing here with the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign.
Sure.
We're running this thing on a shoestring. It is absolutely a shoestring. It's the last thread in a frayed shoestring. And the fact of the matter is, any help we have has come from it's just like running the horn. Any help we get comes from individual listeners. Any help most of the help that the AIC campaign has gotten has come from individual contributors. Not a dime, Guy James, not a dime has come from the Sierra Club. I mean, not one penny. And yet they claim they want to end mountaintop removal.
It's so sad and it's so frustrating. I am so frustrated sometimes that I don't dare sit and think about it. You think people don't understand it. I think it comes down to it. Do they want to understand? Do the powers that be that do, that have the purse strings, do they want to? Obviously they don't. We've been at these functions before where they have to scratch for every dime and, you know, we have to wheel and deal on airline tickets to go to get the best price and all that. Yeah. I know people who go first class to Republican functions. But it's that way always, and I don't see any change on the horizon. That's the part that really is disconcerting to me. I don't see anybody saying, well, maybe, you know, I know I won't hear back from him. I have a little connection to Al Gore and no response. Tried to run some things past him, and I know that sounds silly to a lot of people with Al in his ivory tower, I guess. It's heartbreaking sometimes. You go out and think you got all these good ideas and you've paid your dues and you know doggone well in your heart and that you're a good broadcaster and you deserve a shot at something like that, and it doesn't come. And what people don't understand, it's not a personal thing. I could never have cared less if you know, being a household name or anything like that. Just wanted to do something. Just wanted to get it accomplished. Get educate people. That's all. It's not about money. It's not about personal gain. It's not about ego. It's not about any of that. It's about educating people and making sure they know the truth.
Absolutely, and providing an opportunity for folks to reach across and reach out to each other and understand that they are not alone, that that unlike what the right wing has told them for 30 years, that they're not crazy for being liberal or for being progressive or whatever it is we care to call it. That there's a lot of people who feel this way. And the fact that it's such a struggle is... it's frustrating at times, but by the same token, Guy, I have to say this much. We don't, you know, to quote the old song, we ain't never got our picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone, but the fact of the matter is, Air America is long dead.
Yep.
Democracy Radio, long dead.
Yep.
Yeah, but guess what, Guy James? We're still staying
around. Yeah. You know, I remember you said that to me one time. Air America's going to do what they do, but it's going to do what they do. But we're going to be around when they're gone. And guess what? Just need some backing by the right people, and I'll complain about that till the day I die. But, well, you know what, Bob? I've got to get going.
I imagine you do. I've kept you longer than was neighborly, but I hope this can happen again soon, Guy.
Yeah, I could talk to you all day as long as it don't bore people.
Nobody's bored. Trust me.
I relish the opportunity to talk to you this evening. No one I'd rather talk about politics. We are like-minded on many things, and I think we're both sensible people and understand what the Obama administration has tried. I still say, to interrupt myself, I still say the one complaint I have about Barack Obama, and I have several, but the biggest complaint I had about Barack Obama, I wasn't sure just how smart he was when he ran for election because of the mess that he was getting into. Ooh, I tell you what, the guy's got big gonads to have stepped into that situation. He did. I admire him for that. I really do. That would have been unthinkable for most people to step in to the mess he did. And so I do admire him for his stick-to-itiveness and his guts for taking this on, because he knew if it wasn't wine and roses, it was going to be a difficult road to hoe. And I still have confidence that the man can turn things around. I'm not one of these people that buys this deal that all the president has to do is snap his fingers and jump.
No. See, I think he could turn things around too, Guy, but it's hard to turn things around when you're trying to turn things around and somebody's sitting next to you trying to tear the steering wheel off the column.
Well, whoever are you talking about? You're not talking about those people on the other side of the aisle.
Oh, perish the thought.
You mean that?
I am talking about them.
You don't think they've been cooperative?
Jesus Christ, they jumped out there today, Guy. And see, I'm going to make you be on the phone a little bit longer. They jumped out there today and said, well, have you seen the tepid economic growth from President Obama? He's killing America. And they have the, and this is, you know, the proof that there's no bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. Because the minute that Boner said that, if there really was, a lightning bolt would have come down and just... And that'd be the end of John Boner, you know, for the sack of crap that he is. You don't, on the one hand, say that the economy's not growing enough, and with the other hand, sit there and go hammer and tongs trying to keep the economy from growing. You know, there was an American Jobs Act proposed that they dropped their pants and pooped on.
Yeah.
You know, we're back in what I was talking about in the zoo. You know, you got to be careful when you go through the monkey house because they fling that stuff.
Yeah, they've got the plow horse tied to a tree and whipping him, trying to tell him to pull that plow.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Oh, it's crazy making. Guy James, I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and let's do this again sometime soon. I just heard from Ben Birch, our buddy, and he said, tell Guy James we said howdy and sure miss him.
Oh, Ben. Ben the man.
See, that's another one. I keep saying it on air, and one of these nights I got to do it. I keep talking about how we have to get Ben Birch on the air to tell his story, too, because that man single-handedly saved the very idea of progressive talk radio, and nobody knows it.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. That's so unfortunately true. It really is. But, I mean, the guy done yeoman's duty like no one else I know. And other than, you know, people like you and me and everybody appreciating him, probably in the annals of Capitol Hill, the halls of Capitol Hill, you probably wouldn't find any Democratic congressman even know who Ben is. And what a rotten shame that is. Really is.
Yep. Guy James, our best to everybody down there, and you take care of yourself and don't be a stranger.
Whatever happened to the revolution?
We all got soldiers
written away. Whatever happened to the revolution?
I think it died just yesterday.
Whatever the revolution?
We all got soldiers written away.
Whatever happened to the revolution?
I think it died just yesterday.
Check. Yeah, there we are. Okay, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Hey, sorry about the breakup there, but under clear blue skies in West Virginia, the Horn Studio internet just went down again. You'll have that. So we lost phones, we lost internet, and I'm completely reconnected and streaming live here from. And there we are. Okay, great. So I'm streaming live to you now directly from AIC headquarters in Washington, D.C. Under clear blue skies, the internet and the phones just crashed again in West Virginia. I guess you'll have that. I am, however, connected up at Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is the handle. If you want to try to converse that way, we'll see how that works out. I suggested that we might do that. John, I should be rolling now. maybe it will probably require restarting players. Hear all that typing? This is what happens when you do it on the fly. You know, the fact of the matter is sometimes we just ask the technology to do. We ask the technology to do things that the technology may not be possible. Well, we ask it to do more than probably it can do. But that's how we've operated for all these years. No, David from Maine, I don't have a foam pad to hit my head on. We never did get around to having those rubber bricks made. But I'm recording this, and hopefully Ben Birch will be able to combine this with the file from Agnes, and we will all go from there. Ah, thanks, John Fox. Yes, Marty, I art live. And I wanted to make sure that we got the rest of the program in, because A, it's Friday on the front porch. B, I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation with Guy James. It needs to happen more often. Well, I miss the hours per day that Guy did day in and day out. America needs his voice. Now, where to begin? Oh, I know. You know, of course, that this is another live broadcast from the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign in Washington, D.C. So I've got a question for you. And hopefully you'll have an answer. I want to give you an example of what it's like when people begin making requests of their member of Congress. Somebody did this. Who lives in the Illinois 17th Congressional District? I know some of you do. Because apparently calls have been going in to Republican Representative Bobby Schilling's office, asking Bobby Schilling to support the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign. And that just impresses the daylights out of me. Because they're asking for information about the bill. Whoever did that, thank you. You're making a difference. The other thing I wanted to remind you, I don't know if I'm going to do this or not. It depends on how the technology behaves. But tomorrow is a very big deal here in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow is a massive rally down in front of the Capitol of the United States by people demanding their rights to go on being human beings. In short, they are protesting the poisoning of their world, the taking of their clean water, and the ruining of their bodies in the name of profit, once again, this time by the natural gas industry, fracking their world away. Yeah. So I plan on being there. There's a heck of a speaker's list. I look forward to it. And I don't know, depending, like I said, if the technology cooperates, it's entirely possible that Ferg and I might stream some of it. You'll just have to check the Horn Ustream page to find out. Might even try to reach the Horn's regular stream with it as well. Audio won't be great, though. But it has been an amazing week here in D.C., and we've got more work yet to do at the beginning of next week. More meetings, more doors to knock on. And I hope you'll continue to call and continue to let me know when you call your representative, be they Republican, be they Democrat, so that we can make contact with them and let them know who we are and what we're trying to accomplish. That would be wonderful. It is 9 minutes before the hour, and like I said, if you want to try to connect via Skype, you are more than welcome to do so. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact address in Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn. Jump right in if you wish. The conversation is fine. Nice little crowd in the chat room tonight. Benedict put a link up that we lost right at the very, in one of the glitches, but I've got it now because it was sent on to me. Sorry, answering email at the same time. No, there were a bunch of stories I wanted to get into for this Friday on the front porch. The Olympics, of course, you know, have started. Are you following the fascinating little hashtag on Twitter, Romney Shambles? Yeah, that's got to be driving the Romney team about half crazy. It's not the hashtag that he always wanted. Romney Shambles. A reminder, you can, of course, go, as mentioned, AICACT.org. That's where you want to go to learn all you can about doing your end of the advocacy work on the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign on the AIC Act. AICACT.org. BobKincaid@gmail.com is my email address. You can also tweet to at Bob Kincaid on Twitter or find me on Facebook to let me know what you're doing to help get this passed. We have a stunning story. I told it on the air, and I hope it's being reduced to some written form because we want to get it up on the website, what it looks like, what determined citizen activism really, really looks like. And if you've got a story to tell about how you're encouraging people, encouraging your representatives to sign onto the AIC Act, we'd love to have that too. If you'll just write the story and send it to me, BobKincaid@gmail.com. I think we're going to try to create a space on the AIC Act website where people can tell their stories of why this matters to them and what they're doing to get it sponsored and ultimately to get it passed. Now, where to go to finish out the evening's program? Because there's a bunch. I did mention that story in my conversation with Guy James about the Maryland guy, the man in Maryland today, arrested for, like I said, when he was arrested, he was wearing a T-shirt that said, "Guns don't kill people, I do." It was Wednesday. After he was told he was being fired, that he threatened, "I'm a joker. I'm going to go load my guns and blow everybody up." That's when Maryland police went to his home, found 25 firearms and 40 boxes of ammunition. That's one of the problems with these law-abiding gun owners. You don't know that they've gone around the bend until it's too late. You don't know that they've gone, you know, a bit funny in the head, Jack. A bit funny. No, you don't know until it's too late. Until 12 people are dead, or 30 people, or 50 people, or 70 people are wounded. You don't know until it's too late. Except for the one thing that we do know, that is that, for instance, Neil E. Trescott's
right to keep and bear arms was more important than, say, a six-year-old little girl in Colorado's. See how it works? Yeah. Mercifully, Maryland was spared a potential copycat killing. The story I'm looking at says he is presently undergoing medical evaluation. See, that's the thing. The medical psychological evaluation should have been undertaken before he was ever allowed to purchase a firearm. But the gun goons can't even tolerate that notion. 3 minutes before the final hour of this evening's program, and if you ever wanted to see just a dictionary definition picture of what hypocrisy looks like, I've got it right here. You know, we've talked at some length about the whole Penn State nightmare. I hesitate to call it a scandal because it is so far past a scandal that the light from scandal won't reach it for a million years. It's a nightmare. It's a horror. It's a disgusting one-man orgy of rape. And so, to the extent that the rapes involved little boys who were defenseless, who were in the charge of a charitable organization, and that charitable organization was used as a grooming ground for little boy rape victims, you'd think that your average garden variety, family values Republican, you'd think that he would jump right out there in defense of the little boys. But then again, let's remember, we're talking about little poor boys. Little poor boys who might just happen to have been dark-skinned. So it comes as no surprise that in an interview on KSKY 6:60 a.m. in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, this morning, Friday morning, Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum defended, no, really, defended not the little boys who were raped, but Penn State University. Really, not kidding. If you doubt, I've actually got the audio. Let's see if that goes out over the interweb tubes when we play it. You got the stomach for this? I've heard it once. It isn't easy. Oh, now, where'd you go? Oh, for pity's sakes. I wonder why I don't have audio of that. All right, well, I'll just have to read it to you then. Sorry. Don't worry, it doesn't contain the phrase blah. Rick Santorum, in deciding to defend Penn State University over little raped boys, then again, he defends his church over little raped boys too, so does it really come as much of a surprise? I actually read the free report, he said. I don't know if you did or not, but I did.
And my concern with the Free Report, a lot of the conclusions in the Free Report aren't matched by the evidence that they presented. Yeah, they are. Yes, they are. But never mind, because that's just a fact. And so I've been taking a lot of folks, talking to a lot of folks at Penn State, says Sanctum Sanctorum, and they say, you're just going to have to wait for the criminal trial of these two guys at Penn State. I think there's going to be a whole new line set on what really went on there. So I'm sort of sitting back and waiting for the facts to come out, as opposed to at least I'm being told is a version of the facts. Let's get the truth. So I think we're going to see some things come up a little different in the next 6 months. I just want to make sure we get it right. Sure. Do we understand that now? Penn State University is more important than little raped boys to Rick Santorum, who is pro-family, who has all kinds of family values, who had so many family values that he brought a little dead baby home and showed it off. Now, it's not, well, you know, Brother Albert's a little purple lizard, and passed it around to his other children and scarred them for life. He's got, that's the kind of family values he's got. Right? Sure.
I did not want the death penalty for Penn State. I think their redemption...
Oh, here we go. We've got the audio now.
In terms of their internal...
Goody.
...investigation, which was damning, and the NCAA doing everything but yank the program, I think they did exactly what I think. I did not want the death penalty for Penn State. I think their redemption can be found both on and off the field.
Redemption.
I love the tough punishment. I'm glad they didn't do the death penalty. The Paterno statue had to come down. I think the system is working, I think, isn't it?
Here's my two cents. I actually read the Free Report. I don't know if you did or not, but
most
I did.
Of it. Mm-hmm.
And my concern with the Free Report is a lot of the conclusions of the Free Report aren't matched by the evidence that they presented. And so, I've been talking to a lot of folks up at Penn State, and they're saying, you just have to wait for this criminal trial of these two guys at Penn State. That I think there's going to be a whole new light set on what really went on there. And so I'm sort of sitting back and waiting for the facts to come out, as opposed to what at least I'm being told is a version of the facts. And again, I encourage anybody who really wants to dig into this to read the report and see whether the conclusions that Judge Free makes really fit with the evidence that he's presented. And I can tell you, in a lot of areas, it's pretty darn thin. And so I understand the NCAA and what they did in reacting to that report, but you know, that's not how their procedures work. They actually usually do their own internal investigation, their own fact checking. They sort of accepted somebody else's work product. And I'm a little concerned, as I always am. And I found this to be the case when I was in Congress. When a crisis happens, everybody wants to act right away.
Yep.
to be decisive and put it behind them, instead of maybe taking a little bit of time and seeing how this all works out and whether we get the truth. And so I think we're going to see some things come up a little different in the next 6 months. And I just want to make sure that we get it right, as opposed to just reacting to public opinion.
I wanted to ask. Thank you. Appreciate it a lot. Rick Santorum, always a pleasure. Thanks, sir. Have a great weekend.
Oh, it is. It's always a pleasure talking to Rick Santorum. You know, as long as you can keep the vomit down. Penn State University is more important than little raped boys. How many more cases, how many more stories do we have where we get these profound juxtapositions of right-wing hypocrisy laid up against, we're not going to say that either, juxtaposed, alleged right-wing values juxtaposed, actual right-wing realities. How many times?
The fact of the matter is, 430 interviews were performed as a function of the free investigation. 3.5 million emails were reviewed. And the free report lays it out and makes it clear that Paterno, Spanier, and a number of other Penn State officials were presented with strong evidence of Jerry Sandusky's brutality toward these little fragile, susceptible boys. And they still swept it under the rug. But it doesn't matter to Rick Santorum, because I guess as long as it's not his little boy getting raped. Yeah. When the story broke, Rick Santorum noted, "Of course I'll be rooting for him," talking about Joe Paterno. "I'll be rooting for him and wish him the best." Have you sent those best wishes to any of Jerry Sandusky's rape victims, Rick? Because I'm guessing the easy answer is no. Yeah, exactly, Ray. Even worse, Penn State sports programs are more important than raped little boys. Sorry about the mic levels. It's, well, some of this happens on the fly. But, you know, you were kind enough to tell me, and I hope things have gotten better. It's about 8 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch. And, Friday stuff. I mentioned this story to Guy James as well, because it plays into Ohio politics. The GOP nominee for the Senate of the United States in Ohio is a guy by the name of Josh Mandel. He's one of these teabagger types that's out there talking to the fine, upstanding voters of Ohio, telling them all about how he'll never vote to raise the debt ceiling. Because we just can't, well, we can't live on the credit card. Unless we're waging war on brown people or something like that. And then we can run the war on the credit card like we did in Iraq and Afghanistan. If you go to his website, you'll see "Stop Increasing the Debt Ceiling." He's told voters in Ohio that he would have voted against last year's debt deal that kept the United States out of default. He wants to see America default. Now, you might ask yourself, why is that? Well, among other things, Josh Mandel's wife has some, we don't know how much, shares in an outfit called ProShares Ultra Short 20 Plus Year Treasury Exchange Traded Fund. And that fund bets against American debt, and her fund goes up when the sovereign debt value of the United States goes down. That fund, for whatever value is in it, would skyrocket if the United States defaulted on its treasury bill payments. The disclosure forms you have to file to run for Senate say that they own up to $1,000 in treasury shorting. I guess that's just diversification. But then apparently Mrs. Mandel owns $15,000, up to $15,000 worth
outright in ProShares Trust Ultra Short Bond. ProShares, according to Think Progress, sells 4 ultra short bond products: 20-plus year treasury, 7 to 10 year treasury, 3 to 7 year treasury, and treasury inflation protected securities. And they all bet against the government of the United States. If you had functioning conscience, functioning morality, you couldn't. But since he's a Republican, it's easy, because I was about to say, how could you in good conscience and calling yourself patriotic bet against the debt of the United States? I mean, shoot. I'm not a gambler, but I can't... Even when I know my beloved Mountaineers, my West Virginia Mountaineers, are going to take it on the chin and get stomped, I can't bring myself to bet against them. But this guy, who wants to be a member of the Senate of the United States, can bet against his own country? Jesus. Then again, avarice knows no nationality, right? Yeah. News coming in. Sad news for somebody out there. And maybe just a little bit karmic. WRBL News 3 on your side, reporting in a story datelined Columbus, Georgia, and provided to me just a moment ago by News Ninja Gene. Donald A. Perry, the Vice President of Corporate Public Relations for Chick-fil-A, has gone to his long home. The news came from Ross Cathy, the owner of Midland, Georgia's Chick-fil-A, and a family member of CEO and bigoted homophobe Dan Cathy, said that Donald A. Perry died this morning from a heart attack. The Chick-fil-A statement read as follows: "We are saddened to report the news to you that our dear friend Don Perry, Vice President of Public Relations, passed away suddenly this morning. Don was a member of our Chick-fil-A family for nearly 29 years. For many of you in the media, he was the spokesman for Chick-fil-A. He was a well-respected and well-liked media executive in the Atlanta and University of Georgia communities, and we will all miss him. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family." You know, very seldom do things like massive heart attacks happen as a result of a single cause. Usually they are made over the course of decades. But I wonder if somewhere the fundamentalist Christian Dan Cathy, I wonder if somewhere he's asking himself tonight, I wonder if maybe he fell on his knees and asked his Savior whether he had in any way contributed to his friend Don Perry's demise. Because when you have a conscience, you ask questions like that. Oh, wait a minute, he's a fundamentalist Christian. Never mind all that BS about a conscience. Sorry. Yeah. Guess not. Marty noting, all those people who are considering joining Huckabee and eating all the Chick-fil-A they can better, they might take heed of that one. Yeah. Well, unless it's, Rick Santorum. Have another one, Rick. Tasty, isn't it? Yeah, have two. Hey, can we dip those in butter for you? Real butter? Here, have a milkshake. It's got extra whipped cream on it. It's a peachy shake. Don't ask. There's an entry in the Urban Dictionary. You don't want to know. Got it tweeted at me the other day. All right. And then this. We'll probably wrap up fairly soon just because all the, well, the technical stuff and it's Friday. No, but it kind of goes hand in hand with the Chick-fil-A story, because the Chick-fil-A story is, of course, a story of bigotry. I saw some right-wing press release earlier today. Saying that, and of course it was picking up. It's weird to see how much influence a freak like Brian Fisher has, but there it was. The liberal pro-gay homosexual agenda people that want tolerance and diversity have no tolerance for people who have a difference of opinion and who merely want to support traditional marriage. I saw that and I about threw things. Made me a little crazy. A difference of opinion on whether or not people should be entitled to basic constitutional human rights in this country? No, you know what? I have no tolerance for somebody who says that an entire group of people should not be accorded human rights. I have no sensitivities whatsoever for people who are so bigoted as to say that people should be discriminated against because of who and how they love. F 'em. Feed them fish heads. But that difference of opinion on traditional marriage, I have yet to see an advocate for marriage equality say a blessed word against so-called traditional marriage. Not a word. Because what that implies, and you can understand from the way that they don't think real good, they just try to manipulate people's hatreds. That's the nature of the right wing. But I have yet to hear a marriage equality advocate say, we insist that everyone be engaged in a same-sex marriage and that no one be able to marry as a man and a woman anymore. Because that's what it means when you allege that someone is against traditional marriage. No. It's the difference between being inclusive and exclusive. It's the right-wing religion industry that wants to exclude millions of people in this country from access to constitutional rights. It's the sick right-wingers. Whereas those of us who support marriage equality are merely saying, let folks get married. This is not difficult. We afford constitutional rights to everyone, and we do not. The Constitution is not fond of excluding people from. Well, okay, it didn't used to be. You get my idea. I've mentioned a couple of times that I'm rereading a book I read many, 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 many years ago, called A Distant Mirror by Barbara Tuchman. I just finished a passage in which she writes at length, about the misogyny that informed the church in the Middle Ages. One moralizer for the church writing in the 14th century, wherever beauty blossoms on a woman, underneath lies filth. There's that loving compassion of Christ Jesus for you. Well, guess what? It may be 2012. In many ways, it may just as well be 1412, 1312. And what do I I mean? Well, this story comes from Massachusetts. The Diocese of Worcester in Northbridge, Massachusetts, decided to sell off some property. For all I know, because they needed to pay some judgments for the little boys that got raped by their priests. They had a mansion. Yes, yes, yes. The church that promotes the salvation afforded by a man who owned nothing but a pair of sandals and his robe. That preaches poverty for the rest of us, but yeah, you get the idea. They had this mansion they weren't using, so the Diocese of Worcester decided to sell it. And they found a purchaser, what the law calls a purchaser for value. The purchasers were James Fairbanks and Alan Barret, or perhaps Barrett. They were going to buy. They were going to buy the property, the mansion, and all the surrounding property, and turn it into a banquet hall. A feasting space. And the Diocese of Worcester originally said, "What? You got money of your own? We'll take it." But then in the course of sales discussions, it turned out that the bank was going to want a sprinkler system installed. So Messrs. Fairbanks and Barrett made a new offer to cover the costs for a sprinkler system. All of a sudden, the Diocese of Worcester said, "You know what? We don't want to sell after all. Our grandmother's three-legged moss-covered family credenzas there, and we just can't bear to part with the place." Asked publicly why they had backed out, the Monsignor, a man by the name of Thomas Sullivan, said that they didn't think that Messrs. Fairbanks and Barret or Barrett couldn't come up with the money. Then there was the oopsie moment. An email went public. The Monsignor wrote to the real estate broker as follows. "I just went down the hall and discussed it with the bishop." That just sounds dirty, doesn't it? Babbling with the bishop. Oh, no, that's beating the bishop. I'm sorry. "I just went down the hall and discussed it with the bishop. Because of the potentiality of gay marriages there, something you shared with us yesterday," talking to his real estate broker, who along the way said, "Oh, yeah, they might do some gay marriages there. I mean, it's Massachusetts. It's legal here in the Commonwealth, you know." "Because of the potentiality of gay marriages there, something you shared with us yesterday, we're not interested in going forward with these buyers. I think they're shaky anyway. So just tell them we will not accept their revised plan, and the diocese is making new plans for the property. You find the language." Now, there was not a shred of evidence to suggest that Messrs. Barrett and Fairbanks were married. It's not even clear as to whether they're gay. You know, guys do go in together and buy property from time to time who don't necessarily engage in connubial bliss. Right? Bless his heart. Mr. Barrett says he's going to fight him. "For the sake of my dignity, I'm not walking away." good and for the sake of the dignity of others. I told the bishop that they might be having some of those gay marriages, and he said, "Ooh, heavens to Betsy, no." Yeah, that's the representative of Jesus Christ on earth. Because, you know, there's that very famous verse there in, what is it, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, I don't remember. Yea, verily, I tell you that the homos shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. Yeah, that's a very famous New Testament Bible verse, famous mainly for the fact that it doesn't exist. Verily, verily, I say unto you that unless you be heterosexual, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. See, that verse isn't in there either. Nope. There's all kinds of verses that aren't in the Bible. Oddly enough, the right-wing religion industry is constantly going at them hammer and tongs. Blessed are the heterosexuals, for they shall get into heaven, but the homos won't. Nah, see, that one's not in there either. Amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Bill writing in from Cleveland. Oh, by the way, I had a note from Bill. Bill tells me he's having some computer problems. And if anybody is conversant and would like to help Bill maybe sort out his software problems or whatever they are, shoot me a line and I will put you in touch with Bill. Bill writes, "Hey, Bob, let's ask Malloy to try and relay Santorum's feelings to Jopa through Breitbart when Mike yells down into hell." Oh, God, the weirdos at Mediaite would go crazy on that one, wouldn't they? They most assuredly would. A little bit of good news. Not a lot, but some. I mentioned the story the other night of Caleb and Kate Medley. Caleb is the rising young comic from the Denver area, who got shot in the eye when he and his wife went to see The Dark Knight Rises in Aurora. Kate made it out of the theater safely. She was 9 months pregnant. And this past Tuesday, their little son, Hugo, came into the world. Caleb's family is still out there trying to raise money for what may be millions of dollars in care. No word on whether Medicaid or something similar may be available. CHIPS, maybe? Children's Health Insurance Program? For little Hugo. No, they're still trying to raise enough money to cover the massive amount of treatment that is required of someone with a gunshot injury to the brain who survives. But there's a little bit of mercy being extended. Children's Hospital of Colorado says that it's going to use donations as well as its charity care fund to cover the medical expenses of uninsured there from the Aurora massacre. Victims there who are insured, well, the hospital says it's going to waive copays for them. Then there's Health One. They own Medical Center of Aurora and Swedish Medical Center. They say they're going to limit or eliminate charges based on the individual circumstances of the patients. Between the two of them, those hospitals have treated 22 of the shooting victims. But they have warned that the doctors may not waive their fees. No word yet from University of Colorado Hospital or Denver Medical Center as to what they're going to do about the bills that are being racked up by patients there. A spokesman for the hospital where young Caleb Medley is still being treated did say, "We're going to do everything that we can for these patients on a case-by-case basis. The University of Colorado Hospital provides $300 million in uncompensated care every year." Donations from everyday citizens, as well as the movie studio that released the Batman movie, have crossed the $2 million mark. But the problem is $2 million won't necessarily even cover the needs of the lifetime needs of somebody who goes from being just another person to a person who needs care 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Caleb Medley's family has thus far raised $500,000 out of the $2 million he may yet have in bills. And on the one hand, you want to say good, 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 good. It's a good thing that these hospitals are acting with some degree of humane concern for the suffering. Yes, very good. But it's hard to look at it and not at the same time say, why can't we have a system in this country where nobody ever has to worry about whether or not they will be given adequate treatment for their injuries? I'm guessing that struggling young comics don't make a lot of money. Right? Just think. With universal single-payer health care, he might turn into a brilliantly funny, fabulously wealthy comic who could at least work on his craft instead of wondering whether or not his wife would be cared for or his young son cared for if he was unable to get them private health insurance. But that's too much to ask of America, isn't it? I guess so. But yes, yeah, there's too much money going into that Medicare and Medicaid. For instance, the merciless right-wingers in Texas claimed that it would bankrupt Texas to opt in, because, you know, remember, the Affordable Care Act didn't allow opting in or opting out. They just said, look, Medicaid's going to expand. And the Supreme Court said, oh, no, you can't do that. You can have your individual mandate, but you can't force the states to participate in an expansion of Medicaid for the working poor. Can't do that. That's unconstitutional. No siree, Bob. Governor Rick Perry said Expanding it would threaten even Texas with financial ruin. The Medicaid expansion would bring 1.8 million Texans into the ranks of the insured. 1.8 million. That's a lot of Texans. The cost for that between 2014 and 2019 is around $2.6 billion. Chump change in the realm of, say, running a nasty little illegal right-wing war against the people of Iraq, say. But it would threaten even Texas with financial ruin. There's only one problem. Every last dime of the Medicaid expansion that adds people to the Medicaid rolls and gets rid of means testing up to 136% of the poverty line, every last penny of it for the first several years is covered entirely, every last penny, by the United States of America. You know, we the people, taking care of each other as we should be. So no, Rick Perry, you fundamentalist right-wing teabagging liar. The Medicaid expansion would not threaten even Texas with financial ruin, because those $2.6 billion would be paid on time, every penny, by the federal government. That's the way the Affordable Care Act was written. That's one of the reasons that you can look at the decision about the Medicaid issue and realize that the fix was in, that this was the trade-out. Okay, you can have your individual mandate, but we're not going to be allowing the working poor into a single-payer health care system. No, sir. And it's crazy-making. Not a dime of that $2.6 billion would come out of the Texas budget, or Alabama's budget, or Florida's budget, or Carolina's, North Carolina, or South Carolina, or Tennessee, or anywhere else in Jesus Land's budget. Not a dime. For the first 5 years, not a dime. And probably not afterwards. But assuming for a moment that it would, The Nation magazine created one of those little Venn diagrams. In 2006, the state of Texas initiated a property tax cut. Between the years 2014 and 2019, the applicable years of the first five years of the Medicaid expansion, the state of Texas voluntarily flushed away $30 billion down the tubes. Merely repealing that cut and taking 1/15 of it. Okay, 1/10, 1/10, let's round fairly. 1/10 of that budget cut would ensure 1.8 million people, would mean that 1.8 million people would not go without health insurance coverage and would not know the gut-bending fear that comes with a decision whether or not to try to save your life or save yourself from bankruptcy, would not compel people to make decisions that no human being should be asked to make. Jesus. Well, it'd bankrupt Texas. Except, Governor Perry, for the fact that you're a liar. Just a liar. It's what liars do. How many for-profit media outlets will point out, besides The Nation, that Governor Rick Perry is a shameless, godforsaken liar? Interesting observation, Benedict, in the chat room. Benedict noting, folks misunderstand the GOP's position on health care. Health care is a supply and demand problem. The GOP simply wants to reduce demand by pricing it out of reach. It's a valid solution, but one that only monsters could endorse. Jesus. And there I stood. Across the street. No, I stood on the same side of the street. I stood on the sidewalk looking at the Heritage Foundation, and the first thing that I was reminded was that, son of a gun, that Affordable Care Act, they wrote the first version of it. It was the Dole response to Hillary Care back in 1992. Do you remember that? Because I do. My friends, Hillary Care will require you to become a member of the Communist Party of the United States of America. Pardon me, I need to chew up this Oxycontin for the refreshing burst of flavor it gives me. I wonder why I can't hear anymore.
Really?
But, you know, because that dark-skinned president suddenly wanted a Republican health care plan because he thought, okay, well, you know, we'll give, this is doable, we'll give them a Republican health care plan. Maybe they'll like that. Oh, hell no, please. But I can't tell you how it, and some of this, I suppose, is country mouse come to the city, and I acknowledge it. And I can't tell you how creepy it feels to stand there within feet of the Heritage Foundation. It's like tapping the baseboards in your kitchen and hearing those little hollow places and just having this disgusting fear. That if you were to crack into it, the whole room would just be overrun with roaches. It's pretty quiet around here where we are. Sometimes I would go outside and walk at night. And I'm not kidding. I saw a roach outside last night that was 2 inches long. It's one of those palmetto bugs. Some people call them water bugs. Goddamn giant cockroach. And I thought of that thing today when I looked at the Heritage Foundation headquarters, and I just thought of all the filthy, vile little roaches with the feces encrusted on their nasty little leg and feet, scurrying around inside that building, trying to pass their diseases off onto the rest of our country. Because that's what they are to me. The hatred that the hatred and graft and grift and greed and avarice that is generated daily inside that building, it is as if we had a disease pathogen lab with an open sewer out into the middle of America. Really? Because that's what the Heritage Foundation does, and the Cato Institute, and the American Enterprise Institute, and all these think tanks that are funded to the tune of millions of dollars. while attempts to have some sort of progressive policy generators, they have to go begging, just like we do. They have to go begging every year. Or whatever it was, Benedict, that was a big damn roach. If it looks like a roach, and it scurries like a roach, and it makes me feel all icky and creepy and crawly like a roach, it's a roach. I'm not gonna fight over taxonomy. Stop it, Tim. Did you smoke it? Bad Rush fan. Bad. The band, not the idiot. No, but it is pretty much time to wrap it up for the evening, and thank y'all for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did the conversation with Guy James. He is a legend. And I will remind you that we are working our way to a merciful end to July. Thanks to kind contributions, we are down at the point where it will only take 20 $10 contributions to get us done with the month. And if we can finish that up tonight and over the weekend, then come Monday and Tuesday, I don't say a word about fundraising, and wouldn't that be fun? $20 contributions, and we're done. Yes, it is only 8:47, Lottie. 8:48 here. By my clock. But time to wrap it up, I think. Yeah, Pacific time. Thanks. But no, I did want to make mention of that, so that hopefully we can finish July and take care of stuff before August starts. It's not bad. 20 folks, $10. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. Thank you to all of you who have helped so much over the last few weeks. When July is gone, I'm going to bid it a most unfond farewell. Richard, you can't ring the show. I'm not in the West Virginia studio. I'm in Washington, D.C. Agnes could have taken your call earlier, but apparently having the extremely expensive internet connections in a place like Appalachistan, no matter how much you pay for them, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that they stay on. You see the problem. We will do some further I'm going to do some further exploration of this Skype business. I've done some initial reading, and I know that you can do for pay groups, but if we could get a series of numbers and get them to roll over, it'd be just like being in the studio in West Virginia, and wouldn't that be cool? Thanks again for all you're doing with the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. You are making a difference. We know it here because we're hearing about it. And when you let me know who you've talked to, then we add them to the list and we make sure we talk to them. There is no better way. There is no better way. No better chance to end mountaintop removal and begin the healing of one of the most tormented regions of the entire United States. There's no better chance than the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 5959. and the sooner we do it, the better. And the fact that you are calling Republican members of Congress and explaining to them that this is not a Republican or a Democrat issue, but a straight-up moral issue that has to do with the well-being and the right of little babies who are wanted in this world, giving them a chance to breathe a clear breath. The fact that you're doing that is nothing short of amazing. Wow, thanks so much. There's five of the 20 slots. Thank you very, very much. 15 now. 5 down, 15 to go. And like I said, I will be tweeting tomorrow from the big fracking rally. So if it turns out that I can put up some sort of a stream, I will do that as well. Whether we realize it or not, we are in the fight, the struggle of our lives. The right wing is in a struggle for profit. The right wing is in a struggle that is driven by avarice. The coal companies, the natural gas companies, the oil companies. But if you read Bill McKibben's 6,000-word piece at Rolling Stone, you know that our backs are against the wall. If you listen to this program, you know that our backs are against the wall. There is a place mountain climbers can tell you about. There is a place mountain climbers can tell you about where you get up onto the rock wall and you pass a point of no return. You reach a point where you can't go back down and you can't stay where you are. You have only one alternative. Climb or die. We're there. If mountaintop removal is not stopped, Central Appalachia will become a dead place sooner than you know. If we don't stop the fracking, there won't be a drink of water between upstate New York and Colorado. And we won't maintain anything like interwebs or intertubes because we found out that apparently the storms have become so damn strong that we can't even keep the connections together. It's getting a little bit dodgy. But you know that. And I am amazed and honored to see the way that you respond. It gives me hope. There's enough of this nastiness going around to make you think, yeah, we're screwed, you know, I don't know. Go get a 24-pack of cheap beer and just sit down and enjoy the ringside view. But there's too much fight left in us. And you prove that every day. And I thank you. And I will be enough of an egomaniac to say that there are those unborn and undreamt of, who, if we figure out a way to continue living on this planet, if we can stop the insanity, the madness, the greed, the avarice, the hate, the poisoning. There are those unborn and undreamt of who someday, though they know not your name, will bless you in your anonymity for having engaged the struggle that they themselves might struggle on in your footsteps and standing on your shoulders. So thanks, everybody, for a magnificent week of broadcasting. Thank you for your help. Thank you for your contributions, your ideas, your emails. Thank you. Thanks go out, of course, always to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Horn Malloy Skype discussion group goes down tonight, by the way. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, whom I might actually get to meet this weekend, which would be very cool. Thanks to John Fox for all he's done, helping Agnes get back into the swing of things this week especially. Thank you, John. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. We have to tell that story someday. Indeed. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net and AICACT.org. Go to AICACT, support the AICACT, and having taken action, take a step to end what the New York Times has called Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.